Stand for the gospel reading of the gospel, Matthew 2, 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in the territory of Judea during the rule of King Herod, Magi came from the east to Jerusalem. They asked, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We've seen his star in the east, and we've come to honor him." When King Herod heard this, he was troubled, and everyone in Jerusalem was troubled with him. He gathered all the chief priests and the legal experts and asked them where the Christ was to be born. They said, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what the prophet wrote. You, Bethlehem, land of Judah, by no means are least among the rulers of Judah, because from you will become one who governs, who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called for the Magi and found out from them the time when the star had first appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search carefully for the child. When you found him, report to me so that I too may go and honor him." When they heard the king, they went. And look, the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. Falling to their knees, they honored him. Then they opened their treasure chest and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Because they were warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they went back to their own country by another route. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Please be seated.
Well, it's called Masada, and it is one of the most beautiful places in the entire world. When you stand at Masada, you stand 1,300 feet above this Dead Sea Valley, and you look out. And it is the most incredible sight you have ever, ever seen. It's a sight that it never leaves you alone. You never forget standing there. But you know, as beautiful and as impressive as it is, anyone who knows the history of Masada knows it is also the site of an unimaginable violence, carnage, and horror. It is said that the very stones of Masada will cry out. The ancient historian Josephus, he tells us that it was in this place that King Herod the Great seized the land and began to build what would be an elaborate complex. It was complete with two palaces, several guest homes, a bathhouse, massive storage, and most important of all, a sophisticated water system that made survival possible even if the area became under siege. Herod wanted to make sure that anybody in that complex could survive for years on end. Now, we don't know if Herod ever really lived there. Some say that he built it as a summer home, an escape from the heat of the Middle East. But historians say they don't think so. Historians think it's more realistic that this was built as a fortress against Herod's enemies. I mean, after all, the water system alone, combined with those steep cliffs, it makes it almost impenetrable. So it would have been the perfect place to escape. And if anyone ever needed a place to escape, it was Herod. No one, including his own family members and the Roman officials, no one liked Herod, nor did they trust him. To say that Herod is one of the most hated villains in all history would be an understatement. There's no doubt that the man was actually very intelligent, but he never used that intelligence to help other people, at least not intentionally, unless there was something in it for him. Yes, he helped rebuild and reestablish the temple in Jerusalem. But it wasn't because he was religious, although he was supposedly a Jew. It was because the Jews hated him. And he thought that maybe if he did this, well, they wouldn't love him and he didn't care. But at least they'd leave him alone. And then, in all fairness to him, he developed an impressive infrastructure. And while it benefited the general population with things like highways, sanitation, and fresh water, what was really important to Herod was the fact that all of that combined added a great deal of wealth to his own coffers. He didn't care about the people. And outside of those few things, it is virtually impossible to find anything redeeming about this man. I mean, Herod was a truly evil person. He would stop at nothing, including murdering his own family, in order to protect himself and his power. So given all of that, it is really no surprise that Herod is the last person one would expect to be included in our Advent celebration. And you know, most years we do a really good job of ignoring him. But it's equally true that ignoring him does not make him go away. He's there. It doesn't matter if we acknowledge him or not. Herod is still there. He's still lurking behind the scenes, ready to strike the moment he feels threatened or challenged. But as mean and as evil as he was, do you know what's really frightening about Herod? He's not just somebody from the past. Because you see, there's a piece of Herod that lives in all of us. And until we deal with him, until we examine our own lives and find those places where his presence is reflected, we will never really experience the true gift of Advent. In her book, An Unlikely Advent, Rachel Billups devotes an entire section as to why Herod became such a hate-filled, villainous human being. I mean, come on. It's highly doubtful that the man was born to be so hateful. Something had to have happened to him. So the question we need to ask is, what was it? What caused him to become the person he was? I mean, did someone in his past insist that he would never amount to anything? Did they tell him that he was just one big disappointment after another? And he did have a brother. Was that brother the favorite one? Or maybe, could it be that his classmates like to build themselves up by tearing him down? You know, we call it bullying today. The way that children make one child the brunt of their sick humor. Or maybe, just maybe, it could be that he had been taught at a very young age that this is a dog-eat-dog world. And the only way to survive and thrive is to be tougher and meaner than everyone else. And now I have to ask you, does any of that sound familiar? Have you ever been the victim or maybe the perpetrator of some cruel negative message to someone else? Maybe it was just in a moment of anger. Maybe you really don't know why you did it. You just did it. But the words, the actions, the feelings, you meant to cut them down. You meant to hurt him. When we think about it, it makes us angry. And sometimes we just lash out because we've been hurt. As Rachel Phillips points out, I quote, "Hurt people hurt people." And when we hold onto our hurts and wounds, they become weapons formed against the very people we love. You know, when we allow those hurts to fester, they begin to take over our lives. And then one day, we find ourselves being Herod to the very people we love. We're the ones who allow the spiral of violence to spill out around us. We're the ones who rob others of the peace, the happiness, the contentment that should be theirs. And when we do, regardless of the reason, we become the villains in their stories. And it's only when we reflect upon our own lives and honestly identify those places where we have been both the victims and the victimizers that we can begin to claim the true meaning of Advent, the true importance of Emmanuel, God with us. For while we often use this time of year to talk about preparing for the Christ child and making room in our hearts for him to dwell, until we are ready to really examine our lives, those parts of us that the roots run deep into the soil of hurt and anger and revenge, there's very little hope that we will ever have room for him to dwell with us. Now, if all of this sounds negative, or if you have ever uttered the words, "If you really knew me, you wouldn't like me," then I invite you to remember one very important thing about the Christ child, the one that we're waiting for. He did not come into this world in an isolated, out-of-the-way palace where he would be protected and pampered. When Christ came into the world, he came into the very midst of the worst possible circumstances around and was surrounded by the dirtiest, most vile and the most miserable people ever. Herod was there, not only living in the palace, he was there in the streets of Bethlehem being lived out in the lives of others. And what is even more remarkable than where Jesus was born is the fact that this is where he chose to spend the rest of his life. He never backed away from confronting the wrongs that people inflict upon each other. He never backed away from standing in front of people who had harmed other people. And he never stopped loving those whom others ignored. He did it. And that, my friends, it's called grace. It is God's willingness to love, forgive, redeem, and set free the least, the lost, and the ugly. Grace is God's willingness to reach into our lives and say, yes, but. Yes, you've done it. Yes, you've said it. Yes, it's been done to you, but. I'm willing to forgive it all. But first, we have to forgive ourselves. And we have to forgive the others. Or that hate will continue to grow within us. God's grace. Like it or not, it includes the Herod among us and within us. But when we accept that grace, when we finally allow the Christ child into the darkest corners of our lives, his Spirit will fill us. It will fill us with a peace that we have never known. A peace that will wash through our lives and out into the world. And it won't happen overnight. It will take time. You see, Christ didn't come with a magic wand in his hand that he waved over our heads and made everything right. Magic doesn't last. But Christ's love for us does. His love, his forgiveness, his peace. It's there. All we have to do is accept it. So once we invite him in, he'll remain in us. He will walk with us. He'll guide us and show us the way to that place that brings lasting peace, the happiness that we all desire. All we have to do is trust him. All we have to do is let go of the Herod within us. What do you say? Are you ready to go to Bethlehem and search diligently for the one who is the Prince of Peace? The one who came to set you and me free. To God be the glory, and all God's children say, amen.